Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we are here with...
Greta Gerwig.
Directorial debut, at least solo directorial debut, right. In Lady Bird, which I gotta say, I think it's my favorite movie at the festival so far. I just adore this movie. It starts off that delightful coming-of-age, you know, story, but man, it almost snuck up on me how I was getting oddly emotional at the end, and I've never had a mother-daughter thing, but the mother-son, I think everyone's gonna relate to it. How much of that is actually, semi-autobiographical?
Well, it's not literally autobiographical, and in that it's not really the events of my life, and I was nothing like Lady Bird. I never made anyone call me by a different name, and I was very much like more of a rule follower, kind of gold star getter.
Right.
But the core of the movie, the sort of deep, complicated love of a family and hometown, that's all really close to my heart. So even though it's not that's not how my life was. It is the core of it. There's a real connection for me.
Yeah. I thought you took something that was, you know, it's very archetypal, the coming of age, but you found a way to make it totally fresh and new, and especially just growing up in this era too. I feel like it really captures what sort of, I guess, I don't know, late 90s, early 2000s,
yeah.
Sort of our post 9/11, you know, war in Iraq, always on TV, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You had it subtly in there. So talk about how that era, you didn't want it to overly dominate the story. It's about the characters and the relationships,
yeah.
But how that sort of, every now and then there's a clip on TV. These kids grew up in a very different time.
Yeah, well, I mean, I wanted it to be in a post 9/11 world because I think, you know, obviously that's the world we live in now. But I think that there's something about sometimes in movies where it feels like, oh, your personal life happens in one area and then history happens somewhere else. And I think the reality is it all happens together. And I think for me that this is... I wanted to show this new changing landscape of a world that these kids were going into and that these parents and adults were having to deal with. So I didn't want to feel like it was happening in isolation from the rest of everything else. And, you know, of course, there's the post 9/11 war in Iraq, all of that happening. And then also, I mean, the movie is about sort of economic struggles, and I think, you know, the eroding middle class that we've been seeing over the past 20 years and how
the
difficult
poor dad
it is.
Is going for job yeah. interviews with his son.
I know. Well, I mean, I think that is, it's reflective of where a lot of people have found themselves and, you know, needing to find a new career in your 50s or even early 60s when you thought that you had job security. And I think that that's something that's not talked about that much, but it happens. And then you're doing that while your kids are also going to college and figuring out what they're doing. And you think, oh my God, how am I going to pay for that? And also, what job is even going to be waiting for them when they're done? And I think, not that that's the point of the film, but just
it's
like everything.
It's a great subtext.
Everything else, it's just like, you know, it's the specificity, I think, of the coming of age. And also for me, you know, one person's coming of age is another person's letting go. And I think the film is just as interested in the letting go. And it's about that story as much as it's about this teenager's story.
Yeah, it's like the parents have to let go in one sense, and they're, you know, the mom is furious she's chosen to go to New York, although she turns around and tries to run back in the airport. Great little scene.
Yeah.
But at the same time, talk about how Saoirse Ronan's character also is letting go in a weird way. She gets there, and why does All You Have His Greatest Hits? Why do you, you know, and she's starting to realize that, oh, maybe I did take that for granted, you know, and the final cut to black, I think it's going to make all of us call up our parents and say, you know what?
Yeah.
You guys weren't so bad after all.
I know. I mean, I do feel like my goal, we used to have a joke that we should put up a title card at the end of the movie that says call your mother, but I do really feel like
that.
To me it's like call your daughter, call your mother, call your dad, call your friend, like call the people who made you and loved you, or call the people you're making and loving. I mean, I feel like that's, for me, what I hope it does is that it connects back to people where they are in their lives or their hometown or their families and kind of allows them to see their journey clearly.
Absolutely. We've talked a lot about sort of the changing world, I guess, in terms of, you said, the wars on TV, politics sort of stuff. But you mentioned the economy. I'm glad you brought that up, too. But also another slice of that, sort of the the religious aspect. Yeah. She's growing up in a Catholic school in, you know, it's at the, now we're in like the 21st century, and that's very different from when you used to just have to take what they said as gospel. Now people are challenging it a little more. I mean, people are challenging for a while. But just talk about sort of how that's woven in there. And then it comes back to a scene where she walks back into church and has almost some sort of like fond memory of it, even if, it, I don't know if it's a spiritual rebirth or whatever, but at least it's like a fond memory of it. But talk about how you sort of wove that in there too.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I didn't want to show, I didn't want to just take pot shots at Catholic school because that's pretty easy to do. The big thing for me is that even though it is, you know, the Catholic Church and Catholic school can be these monolithic institutions, that they're made up by individuals, some of whom are really groovy and awesome.
And like the one nun that thought it was cool with the Just Married thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Like that they have personalities and senses of humors and struggle and triumphs and everything in between. And I felt like that's in a way what I wanted to show is this thing that seems so just like one thing is actually made up of all of these different individuals. And
who are each themselves changing with time.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think if there's a tendency, I think particularly for teenagers, to see people as just as their role in their life. Right. It's like, my mom is my mom, my teacher is my teacher, not thinking your mom is a person who's had a whole life and this is a part of her life, or your teacher is, they go home and everybody's in the middle of their own opera, basically. Right. So I think that's what I wanted to show, especially around Catholicism, is that it's not, look, there are good things and bad things, like every human institution.
Right. Yeah. Well, the munching down on those little wafers, I was cracking up then.
Well, I was told, actually, the priest who is the priest in my movie, he's a priest. And he was totally fine with it because he was like, well, they really aren't consecrated. So they're not, it's not sacrilegious.
Yeah. I think that's where Aronofsky was going for in Mother, too. I think that those scenes kind of connect. No, just kidding, on the symbolic level. Okay, well, religion, what else? Oh, just sexuality, her sexual awakening, too. I mean, Lucas Hedges from Manchester by the Sea, you know, obviously he's, you know, hiding his own sort of closet homosexuality. Yeah. And then her second crush after that is that she eventually crosses. I love that. Sort of the band, the rocker guy, who lies and says he's lost his virginity. Talk about sort of your decision to sort of have these bows enter her life and then just kind of fall aside, because that happens to a lot of us. But I also like that you gave at least Lucas sort of a final, you know, triumph moment where, you know, the football coach stands up and cheers.
Well, you know, what's interesting is even though people are very familiar with the coming of age narrative of evolving into your own personhood, I think in general, people are more accustomed to that story being told about young men, less about young women. And generally, movies about young women center around one guy. It's like the structure of the movie says, there's a right guy, and either you get him as a reward for going through this journey, or that's the goal of the journey. But I sort of started with the premise of, well, what if there's two guys and they're both wrong for different reasons?
And we've all had those relationships,
And not because they're bad people, but because one guy is not going to solve your life.
Or the timing's off or whatever.
Whatever it is. And also another important thing for me was, I think often in films, girls wait for someone to notice them. And what I love about Lady Bird is she writes these guys' names on her wall almost like a hit list. I'm gonna go get him.
And she crosses them all.
and she goes and gets them. Yeah. And I feel like that sort of agency and your own desire was something that I was interested in. And I also really liked about Lady Bird that it wasn't about them finding her adorable. She was gonna go see what she could make happen.
Well, and it makes it much of a, you know, it's way better to have the active protagonist like that. You know, you're smart move on that. Otherwise, she's passively falling for these guys. No, she takes charge. All right, well, we've gotten this far. We've gone really on all these themes, which is what I love. Now, bring it to the more superficial question that all these other people are going to ask you. Saoirse Ronan.
Yeah.
Man, how did you, was she always the one in mind?
Well, I don't write with actors in mind, so I didn't have her in mind. But then while I was casting the movie, I heard that she'd read the script and really responded to it. And we we first Skyped, and she kind of said, like, look, I know I'm from this tiny town in Ireland, and I'm all the way across the world, but I'm telling you, this story resonated with me from my heart. Like, I understand this from the inside out. I understand this girl, and I feel like this is, I got to do this. And so we met up at the Toronto Film Festival in 2015, and we read through the whole script, and she read all of Lady Bird's lines, and I read everybody else's lines.
Was she there for Brooklyn at the time?
Yeah.
And you met up talking, oh, wow.
Yeah, so I was there for a film called Maggie's Plan, and she was there for Brooklyn. And we read the whole thing, and then I knew, like, on page two that she was perfect, but I just wanted to hear the whole thing out loud.
Let's ride this out.
Because I'm selfish. Yeah. And it was so incredible. It was it was perfect, but also different than I'd ever thought it would have been right away. And I just saw it. It's like I started getting ideas, which is always a good
That's
sign.
That's when you know you're on the right track.
Yeah. And so she had to promote Brooklyn, and then she was going into rehearsals for, she was going to be in the Crucible on Broadway. So I moved to the film because she was my Lady Bird, and I had to, so I pushed the film, I think, 7 months because I just knew I had to have her.
Yeah, that's awesome. Laurie Metcalf. Yeah. A lot of us will remember from Roseanne, of course. Yeah. I think a lot of people are going to be blown away and say, wait a minute, that's her. Wow, she's really good. Yeah. All these years later, like, that, this woman acts her face off in this movie. I mean, the dad too, all of them. Yeah. But, like, talk about Laurie specifically. I think Oscar nomination, no doubt.
Oh, well, listen, I hope both of these ladies...
Well, seriously, too,
I hope both of these ladies get nominated because what the work they did is so detailed and so extraordinary and so exactly the kind of thing I think should be rewarded. Mm. And Laurie Metcalf actually... I grew up not watching television, so I didn't know her from Roseanne. I knew her from theater because she does a ton of theater in Chicago and New York, and I'd seen her do things on stage that I've never seen anyone do ever. And I have always thought of her as, like, the great, undiscovered in some ways, American actress by film. I mean, she is discovered by theater, and she is discovered by television. Yeah. She's done some film work, but not as much as I think she should based on how bloody talented she is.
So I
got her when we were looking to cast the rest of it. Her name came up, and I thought, well, I mean, if she wants to do it, let's do it. And so she read the script, and then we talked, and she was so instantly connected to the material, and she had a teenager at the time, you know, and who's about to go to college, and she was like, sometimes things come into your life at a moment, and you're supposed to do them. And
so those are some real tears, you think?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
some real deep insight. Okay.
She's also she's from the Midwest, you know, she's from Chicago, and it gives it this quality that I wanted, which I didn't want it to seem, like, too flashy or too L.A. And Tracy Letts and Laurie Metcalf both knew each other from the Steppenwolf Theater, and they have this kind of Midwestern vibe, which felt right for Sacramento. Which is not what you think of when you think of California. So it has, like, they seem like people, like real people. They don't seem like Hollywood's version of real people.
Right.
They seem
real. Which
isn't
always real.
No, exactly.
Yeah. But just I'm sitting here, I can hear the joy in your voice talking about getting to be in on all this stuff now, the casting decisions. Yeah. You know, it's got to be cool, like, directing the movie now. Compare sort of, I think we got to wrap up. So I guess just sort of in closing then, let's talk about stepping out there on the ledges directing now. You know, compare it to, because Mistress America was hilarious, that, and then Frances Ha, you know, all your other stuff. But compare sort of those experiences to finally stepping into this director's chair.
Well, what I've always wanted to be a writer-director, but I didn't go to film school, so I felt like I really learned by doing, and I learned all the craft of filmmaking by being around it. And I've done sort of every job. I've produced, I've written, I've co-directed, I've co-written, I've held the boom, I've edited, I've held a camera, I've done it, but basically, I can hold that microphone. I've done everything except for, have something that was my solo project. And when I finished this script, I thought, this is the moment to leap. And I feel like as I've gone on, I've sort of stepped into bigger and bigger ownership of each project. And so getting to direct was also, a fulfilling this dream that I've had, and also it was like I got to deploy everything I'd learned, which was, it turned out, just it was enormous, everything, because I've been on so many different people's sets and seen so many different people work, and I've seen it from so many angles that once I started putting together the film and all the department heads and in the pre-production and the casting, I had such a clear sense of how I wanted not only the film to be, but how the set to be. Right. And that's just comes from all this experience. So even though it took me a long time to get there, I wouldn't have traded it for anything because I really got to know what I was doing.
Yeah. Well, keep doing it. You're really good at it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Greta Gerwig, everybody.